And you're back with Annie on 3CR Breakfast. And on the line, we've got Andrew Cox. I'm sorry. It's too early in the morning for me, Andrew. Yeah, you're the CEO of the Invasive Species Council. Now, that's a really important issue when it comes to the environment in Australia, isn't it? Because of the problems that invasive species have been found to have on our environment in the State of Environment report that's just come out.
That's right. Yeah, look, we were formed 20 years ago simply because the writer Tim Lowe wrote a book highlighting the impact of invasive species on the natural environment. At that point, it wasn't widely understood how big an impact it was. I mean, it's pests and weeds, and even diseases, really is like a slow burn issue. Colonisation brought lots of new exotic animals and plants to the country, like cats and pet birds and all of the garden plants.
Mullein.
Yeah, and they slowly spread and caused these big impacts. And Australia's got the world's worst mammal extinction rate, and we're now up to over 30 mammal species extinct, and about three quarters of those were caused by foxes and cats. So and another big cohort through chytrid fungus, which was an induced fungus that killed lots of made extinct lots of our frogs. So invasive species are this big issue, and our job is to make sure people understand it and that everyone's sort of doing their best to actually reverse this major impact on the environment.
It's extraordinary, isn't it, that, I mean, it's 20 years, which, you know, for some people, if they're young, that sounds incredibly long time. But actually, it's an incredibly short time when you consider that white settlement, European settlement, is about 240 years. And that slow creep has been going on ever since that arrival.
Yeah, that's right. And it's interesting to look at the rate of arrival of new species, and it's large. Well, we've stopped introducing feral animals like deer and foxes and rabbits. I mean, we've got about 70 feral animals in Australia, but we used to introduce them to try to recreate Australia to look like Europe and other countries. There were specific acclimatization societies doing that in the 1800s. We don't do that now, thank goodness. But even the rate of plants establishing in the wild is about 20 new plants each year are occurring. So that rate of arrival has not gone down. And also the extinctions from invasive species has not gone down. So over the next 20 years, scientists have predicted there's probably going to be about 100 species that have got a 50% chance of becoming extinct. And most of those are from invasive species.
Yeah, it's so pretty extraordinary. Alarming. The figure that you give in the report is 80% of mammal extinctions were caused by invasive species and 20% of next round of vertebrate extinctions over the next 20 years will be caused by invasive species. That's catastrophic.
That's right. And the State of the Environment report that the government released this week, earlier this week, does really, shake you up a bit about how dire the trajectory is across the board. I guess invasive species are one of many other big threats. We know climate change is looming and the threats from that will grow. We know that habitat loss is important. It's, you know, equally as significant as invasive species. And even things like change fire regimes. We've got now more frequent large-scale fires. They're causing a big impact. There's quite a few other impacts too, like even just the way we manage our waters. They're causing big impacts on species, and the State Environment Report really set out how bad the problem is and what the governments, plural, and all of us need to be doing better to stop this trajectory.
You were caught on camera with Minister Plibersek at the National Press Club recently. Can you tell us about that particular event and its usefulness?
Yeah, it was on Tuesday that the new Environment Minister, Tanya Plibersek, launched the State of Environment Report. It was a bit delayed because the previous government sat on it.
surprise, surprise.
Before the election. It was finished in December last year. And she announced, I mean, it was really her first outing as Environment Minister. She's been in the job for 6 weeks. And she talked about not only the State Environment Report, but also what Labor planned to do about it. Now, there weren't any new promises. It was really just reiterating what Labor set out prior to the election, which was to overhaul the environmental laws at the federal level. And there was a major review of the environmental laws a couple of years ago, the Samuel Review, and the government was still to respond to that. So she's going to release a response before the end of the year. Labor's also promised to set up a new EPA, Environmental Protection Authority, at the federal level. We don't have one, and that'll improve compliance and sort of an independent authority to oversee a lot of this. They also promised to double the number of Indigenous rangers across Australia, which is excellent, and also some specific funding about recovering threatened species. So there's a bit of work that Labor promised to do. It doesn't go all the way. Obviously, they're sticking to their promises for the moment, but their job is far, far bigger. We know that needs to be more funding for dealing with these big environmental problems. We've estimated it's probably somewhere between $1.5 to $2 billion a year needed, and at the moment they're probably spending, federal and state, a bit over $100 million a year. So that's just, $100 million. It's $120 million a year, not a year, which is well short of that sort of roughly $2 billion a year figure. So, yeah, there's a lot more that Tanya Plibersek and the new Labor government need to do.
How does that interact with state governments? Do you have a theory on that?
Who is most responsible for managing the environment through our constitution? It is state governments. The federal government has a few levers to pull around major developments, but it also has significant financial resources.
Yeah.
So really, the solution from government has to rely at both levels. The federal government can step in some cases, but the state government is the one who manages the land, manages national parks, except in a few examples, manages all the threats, whether it's land clearing, invasive species management through biosecurity laws at the state level. So, look, it needs to happen at both levels, but obviously the federal government can provide leadership, which is what has been sorely lacking over the last decade.
Yeah, actually, there's been a chipping away because the park services have been, they had their funding reduced, I've noticed over time. Like the workers have had their conditions reduced. Also, say, if you look at CSIRO, the research funding for environmental issues have been reduced. You know, there were a whole range of ways that the last government tried to reduce the sense that it was important to deal with environmental damage.
Yeah, look, the federal government environmental program, the big one, the National Land Care Program, compared to where we were 15, 20 years ago, it's less than half of the funding has been allocated to that. Certainly a lot more they could be doing, and things have declined. National park funding, I guess it's patchy across the country, right? There has been a lot of new national parks created and some resources going into some of those areas. And some states are doing better and some states are worse. But we know that the State of the Environment Report tells us there's this declining trajectory, and even just protecting a national park isn't enough because, for example, fires and invasive species don't respect park boundaries. We need to be doing the work across the landscape, private land, public land, and there's a lot of great conservation work happening from many private landowners and organisations like Bush Heritage and Australian Wildlife Conservancy are managing private reserves. So there's a sort of a stepping up from the community happening in those areas, and also the Trust for Nature's in Victoria and other organisations. But government's got to play their part too, of course.
Do you think that there is an attitudinal issue involved where European Australians have a lack of appreciation of the type of country Australia is? It's not Europe. It's a very fragile country, very old country, and that perhaps we should be listening with bigger ears to Indigenous custodians of land.
Absolutely. I think if we listened to them right from the start, we'd be managing Australia in a very, very different way. We also find that people who live in urban areas are often becoming more detached from the natural environment, and they often think about it in very black and white terms. They often think about species and interactions in a very simplistic way. They might be concerned about, oh, no, we can't kill the feral cats because they're so cute. And even though each night they are just annihilating our native wildlife, and they're often their main relationships with animals is through their pets. So we need to people need to get out in the bush and see what's going on. They need to use the spotlight at night and listen to the scientists and listen to Indigenous people, because I think that wisdom and that Western science is our way forward. And I think it's for all of us. And I think if we have that greater awareness, we get out and use little apps like iNaturalist, and so that they see something they're curious about, take a photo of it, put it into the app and work out what it is, and they can start then sort of understanding how it all works.
Thanks for talking to us this morning.
Yeah, great to talk, Annie. See you. Yeah.